Welcome back to Cargumentative, a show in which a jet-lagged journalist speaks to some grumpy professionals about cars.
Not grumpy. Only one of us
you
is grumpy.
Guys are very
only one
grumpy.
Of us is a grumpy professional.
Really, huh?
No, you're actually the only cheerful person.
I'm always cheerful.
Yeah, but I mean, like the rest of us, I mean, you've just traveled all the way from the Middle East.
Yeah.
And you were up for 26 hours.
26 consecutive hours.
Yeah. The doc has lots of reasons to be grumpy.
Mm. And I have many reasons to be happy.
I have a massive hangover. but we've actually managed to come through this through, like,
we got it together.
Old, yeah, we and we could pull through because of the tequila.
It shows dedication, and it shows that we're here to, you know,
for
and
our fans.
It's for our fans, exactly.
And it's cheap tequila, Mark.
Yeah, it is. It's brutal tequila.
So what were you doing in the Middle East?
So I flew to Bahrain.
Are we doing the news? Is this the news?
Yeah, it's the news. Okay. We're
doing, okay.
So I flew to Bahrain to go and drive the new Panamera and Panamera Sport Turismo GTS models.
Nice.
Which is very cool.
Business class flight?
Of course.
Wow.
Yeah.
Treated like royalty?
Yeah. Well, you know, I am a professional.
I haven't mentioned that before. And you were drinking 200 Rand beers, huh?
200 Rand beers and 400 Rand shots of whiskey.
So give us a play-by-play. Yeah.
Of what?
You arrive?
The bar.
Someone comes to meet you at the airport.
Yeah, so you arrive, a man picks you up, you get into a GMC because they're big and comfortable, then you get driven to the Four Seasons Hotel, which is quite possibly the most hideous building in Bahrain. But it has its own private beach, which is quite cool. So we had a day off to just recover and get into things.
Nice.
So there was some
beer. How hot was it?
Not that hot. It was about 26 degrees.
Oh, that's cool.
So I hung out, had a swim, relaxed. Then in the evening we had a press conference. And it was quite cool. We got to hang out with racing drivers, Porsche factory drivers. There was Kevin Estre and Michael Christensen, who were in the Pink Pig.
At Le Mans.
At Le Mans, which we all know. So that was quite cool. Got to hang out. And I told them about the time I got caught in a hotel fire drill by mistake, which he found was very, very funny.
Good.
And then the next morning...
Always entertaining, Mr. Falk.
Always entertaining. And then in the morning we headed out. We did a drive around Bahrain, which isn't the most fun you can do in a car because basically...
It's all desert.
It's all desert, and they are super strict when it comes to fines.
Really?
Yeah. So Porsche put a little booklet in the cars with a rundown of how much the various fines are.
Oh, really?
And jumping a red robot is a 20,000 Rand fine.
Really?
Because the exchange rate is like 40 to 1.
Wow.
So did you take an SUV and make it drive on two wheels?
No, I didn't do. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't go over 60.
I've seen lots of videos like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do crazy stuff there.
But I think that's more up in Saudi. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway.
How was the car?
The meat of the whole, you know, Panamera GTS sandwich was going to the track. So we went to the Bahrain Formula One track, and we got to do a daytime stint on the short track. And then at night, they turned the spotlights on for us, and we did a nighttime stint on
that's
the big...
That must have been awesome.
That was very cool.
Was that Yas Marina? That's
No,
it's the Bahrain. Yas Marina's in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Ah. Sorry, I'm getting my Emirates mixed up.
So this is the one... Watch Formula One.
And this is where they have the...
Who does,
Mark? I strictly
I watch
don't
every
watch Formula
single
One.
Race.
Why?
It's awful.
No. The last race actually was phenomenal. Not this one. The one before was absolutely phenomenal. We had... Actually, all the podium places weren't even decided until like literally the second last lap.
Do they still overtake each other in the pits?
No, this was overtaking on the track. And actually, it was phenomenal. It actually was probably one of the best races I've seen.
Okay, so one race that I maybe should have watched in the last decade. Whoops.
We're getting sidetracked.
Yeah, tell us about the GTS.
We digress.
So basically, yeah, Panamera GTS, it's the thinking man's Panamera turbo because you're getting the same engine, the 4-liter V8 twin turbo. You're getting a whole bunch of sort of nice exterior trim, interior detailing, Alcantara, Sport Chrono Pack, all that kind of stuff, which is nice to have. And
but that's what all their GTS models are about.
Yeah, it just fills
They're basically a very well-specced normal one.
Exactly, but here you're getting the turbo engine.
So you get the better motor, which is cool.
Which has been slightly detuned, but basically it's the same thing. Okay. So if you bought one secondhand and it got out of its motor plan, I'm sure you could just, you know, flash software the hell out of it and get it back up to turbo spec.
Well, let's not encourage that with Porsches.
No.
Well, it was actually in the news this week was an article around the badging on the Porsches and how it doesn't really make that much sense anymore. I mean, you've got turbos, which used to be the turbocharged cars. Now you've got
all
turbocharged 911s, and the turbo is now just the highest output turbo. Or is it?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, so it's just.
But is there? I'm just trying to think of which cars aren't turbocharged. So the GT3 isn't.
GT3
RS isn't.
No.
And is that it?
Yeah.
Cayman GT4. Well, that's not really a current model.
So that's the only 911 or only Porsche you can buy that's not turbocharged.
Mm.
GT3.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. Good point. We'd have to. At some point in the future, we'll have to sort of dissect the 911 range, because I know that's something that many our listeners, we have listeners, by the way.
400.
We have 400 of them that our listeners are interested in dissecting the 911 range, making sense of it.
But anyway, just to like praise it, great performance out on the track for a big GT car. I mean, this thing wasn't really made to go around Grand Prix circuits, but it was fast, turned in really well. And the brakes were phenomenal. I mean, the main straight there is probably about, give or take, 1 kilometer. And we were hitting the anchors at about 240 km.
Sure.
Like lap after lap.
And it's a big car.
No problems on the brakes. No Lamborghini type.
No Lamborghini. Which is impressive. So, yeah. I mean, you're getting a really capable car, which you could take onto a track for a track day.
And you could also take the dog for a walk.
That's what I was going to say. Put the dogs in the back. Yeah.
It's really cool. And the Sport Turismo in that just looks.
I was going to say.
So what it is?
The Sport Turismo is the one to have for sure.
So what it is kind of a low down SUV. So it's got all the functionality of an SUV without having the ground clearance.
But you can raise it as well, because when I did my road trip in the 4S, it had like this clever, you know, because it has the 3-chamber air suspension.
Yeah, so it can lift itself.
So you get the special access mode, but how which raises what,
10 centimeters?
No, yeah, more. It's about 10 centimeters.
That's a lot, actually.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, here's a little question. The Sport Turismo, really, I mean, I've got a thing for wagons, and I just, and you know, the Sport Turismo is the station wagon version of the Panamera. Do you not think that on the Cayenne they actually went far too conservative? It's actually it really is an SUV. Like it's not a Porsche. The Panamera Turbo, the Sport Turismo should be actually what the Cayenne is. They should have actually made the Cayenne look something
sportier.
Like that.
You think sportier?
Yeah. No, like,
well,
just basically.
Well, a big Cayenne fan.
That's the next car.
After using one for many, many weeks while Porsche tried to figure out.
I grudgingly admit that the Cayenne was brilliant. As much as it hurts, it's true. And so if we're arguing that the Panamera is really an SUV with a lower center of gravity, well, there's not much to lose and everything to gain.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
It might be the way to go.
Tom says it's brilliant, so.
It is. Yeah.
And he's professional.
And he is a professional.
I came in a very early Panamera tonight as well.
Oh, you did?
I did.
A 2+2 Porsche.
Yeah.
Yeah,
anyway, just a wrap up.
But I just want to point out that the braking was by PCCB. So that's Porsche composite brakes. Mm. So ceramic composite. Are they optional?
Yes, they're optional.
On the GTS?
Yeah.
Okay, optional. So the braking performance that you're experiencing is not standard on the GTS.
No.
Which is some
doesn't
issue.
Porsche have a new material they're using in their brakes?
Tungsten carbides.
Yeah.
That's another
first
option.
First premiered, I believe, I stand to be corrected, on the Series 1 Lotus Elise.
Oh, yeah.
And disappeared for 20 years and came back now in Porsche.
It's a very expensive option.
It's underneath the PCCB, but above the normal steel brakes. Quite interesting.
So well, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
So, just to wrap that up, because there's more news we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Panamera GTS, the thinking man's Panamera Turbo, should be coming out here soon and should hopefully be under 2 bar. So, just
Really, it's a gift.
A lot of money, but check them out when they're 3 years old.
Agreed.
Okay.
And a million
next
rand.
Piece of news.
Next piece of thing before we get accused of talking too much about Porsches again. We're going to talk about McLaren. McLaren's brought out a 90s concept car.
No, it is not.
They have.
It is a
they really have, eh?
No,
they really have.
Guys, it's just...
It's a Jaguar XJ220 with a long tail.
And there's nothing wrong with an XJ220.
In the 90s.
It's ahead of its time.
It's not. It's going back to...
It's called the Speed Tail.
Okay, yes.
The McLaren Speed Tail.
And it's being designed to go really, really fast.
Context. So it is a three-seater... Which is
like the original F1.
Which I suppose is the most special part of the whole concept. We don't know what motor it's got. We know it's going to be a hybrid. We know it's going to have over 1,000 horsepower, they said. Yeah. And it's slippery. So it's not designed to go quickly around the track.
In other words, this is the absolute top of the range McLaren to buy at the moment.
Well, no.
No.
It is, but it's not in the same segment as the Senna. So it's not a track car because it doesn't have
expensive than the Senna.
It is more expensive, yeah. But it's in a different segment. So it doesn't have the downforce of the Senna or the LTs, but it is faster in a straight line.
Yeah.
Where you can use that, I don't know.
They're talking what, over 400 k's an hour.
Over 400 kilometers an hour top speed.
So they're probably going for a record. They're going to try and beat the Koenigsegg and the Chiron.
Yep, Chiron. Yeah. Against the Chiron.
Yep.
Yep.
So they want some kind of record, and it's cool, man. It's got those little ailerons.
At the back.
At the back.
Yeah, active.
Made out of, with a flexible carbon. Lovely stuff. Lovely jubbly.
But wait,
what's not to like?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that...
How it looks, the way it looks is what's not to like. I mean, it looks like someone dusted off a 90s concept car.
Yeah, it does.
20 years later.
90s was the best era.
And here we are. Here, just take this. It's fine. We'll charge £1.5 million.
All sold.
Hmm.
How many are they making?
Bada bing. 130 something, I think. Same number as the F1.
I'd rather have a Hennessy Venom.
107, is it?
I believe so.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the Hennessy Venom, if you're going to just want to go fast, I mean, that's what these things are for.
That'd be nice.
Straight line. Yeah. But the Senna, for me, is the real thing. I mean, I know Nadav doesn't like the styling, and the rear wing is the rear wing is ungainly.
If you're listening to this, just Google McLaren Senna. You should know that this is an actual real thing. It exists. You could buy it if it wasn't sold.
We have one in South Africa.
We do. Yes.
One arrived in South Africa.
That's part of the news, is one that just arrived this week.
As
congratulations.
As did a Bugatti Veyron that was imported through Zimbabwe.
Hermes edition.
Because, Hermes, absolutely. But
what edition?
Hermes.
Hermes.
That's with an H. And the reason that they're going through Zim is because these things are left-hand drive. They can't be registered in South Africa. And funnily enough, I've got a real problem with the authorities. You've got cars that are, 30, 40 million rand cars. The duty on those cars wouldn't be an issue for people who are buying them.
Yeah.
The fiscus could do with that money. So instead of getting
massive
things,
money
and they're now finding their way onto South African roads, but on Zim plates. Mm. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Now, here's an interesting question. The McLaren Speedtail being a three-seater with a central driving position, is that going to be okay?
They don't have a box for
it's
that.
It's an interesting
one. They can't tick that box. It's not right-hand drive nor left-hand drive.
You tick both.
Yeah, that's actually quite clever.
Interesting point. Anyway. Never thought of that before.
Yeah, no, I thought of it because my favourite obsession...
Are you on the waiting list, Mike?
The BAC Mono. BAC Mono.
Very nice.
That you'd have the same problem.
Very nice.
Interesting. Try and get
is it a problem
through.
Or is it a not problem?
Well, I don't know. It's a BAC Mono is a single-seater. Looks sort of like an F1 car that, like, for the road. But it would be interesting to see whether or not they would have a problem having the driver in the middle.
Do you know what's more interesting than a BAC Mono? Is the fact that Toyota...
Oh, here we go.
Might be bringing back the MR2 as an EV sports car.
When you say might, it also means they might not.
Yeah, but so they probably will. They probably will because they're upping their sports game.
But in fairness, the MR2s have always been pretty good. And you've owned one.
I have owned one.
The only way they have to go in their sports game is up. So, of course, they're upping it.
I got a question for you. Mm. I mean, and this is an interesting one. So, Kia or Toyota?
Toyota. Because of the heritage.
Actually, I'm going to go with Kia.
Why? I
because they've come further.
Oh, they haven't come further. Kia
of course
has
they have.
No, man.
Kia was making washing machines last year. Now they're bringing out your favorite car. The Stinger.
Yeah.
Toyota has pedigree. Toyota's been in
motorsport. Toyota's been making cars for hundreds of years. They still haven't learned how.
Toyota's won Le Mans.
Did they win Le Mans?
Yes, they did. Of course they won Le Mans.
They were the only entrant.
Doesn't count.
No.
You got a one-horse race.
You can say exactly the same thing about Audi, who won that race like three times when there was no competition after
Peugeot. Oh, agreed. Oh, no, I totally agree.
So,
but Audis are cool.
But we're arguing Kia and Toyota, not Audi and Toyota.
Kia and Toyota are incomparable. I'm sorry, this is not even an argument. Toyota has 40 or 50 or 60 years worth of experience.
What was that Uber I went in today?
I went in an Uber last night. It was the worst Uber I've ever had in my life.
I think it was a Hyundai.
All right.
A Hyundai and Kia, the same thing.
Enough of this.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to answer some listener questions. Welcome back to Cargumentative. In this segment, we are going to be answering some listener questions because we believe it's not all about arguing and expressing weird opinions, but we actually want to give you, the listener, some valuable motoring advice. And so...
Can I just say...
Yes?
If you have any questions, you can get hold of us on...
At TomFaulkner111. So that's my hashtag on Twitter. You can just at me, at TomFaulkner111. And if there's any questions or queries, or you want to know how many cars Mike actually has, just at me.
Yeah.
So cool. Without much further ado, Nadav, you've got a list of...
got a list of questions from a listener, from two listeners, in fact.
Excellent.
As we alluded to previously, we have actual listeners who send us, they know us personally, so they send us to directly. So I'm going to read it in my most professional deadpan.
And then we're going to try and answer it.
Okay.
And we certainly appreciate that you're taking the time to ask questions.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay.
So please do, excuse me, I'll try that again. Please do a section on why the 911 GT2 RS is the most powerful Porsche.
Because it is.
Because they made it that way.
But why?
But is it the most powerful Porsche?
Yeah, it's the most powerful production.
Well, Carrera GT, 918 Spider?
It's not production. But not
current production. Porsche.
Current production, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So give them a break. They might not realize that, and it's a 911. So it's the most powerful 911?
Well, I mean, I think what's interesting about it for me is that think about the original GT2. The Widowmaker, the 993. No, the 993. Now, I remember, because there are a couple in the country, I remember racing in the Porsche Club time trial series and watching those things. They had 450, 480 horsepower, and they were considered to be ridiculously powerful. Now you're talking about this. It's got
700 horsepower.
700 horsepower.
So basically, it's the 911 Turbo S motor that they've turned up to 11 and made two-wheel drive
instead of
four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
So they've taken made more power to fewer wheels, which makes it cray-cray.
Yeah. I must admit, I was at the shops about 2 months ago, and there were two cars parked there. One was a GT2 RS, and it was parked next to a 720 McLaren, which actually is an interesting race, those two. I mean, 700 horsepower, 720 horsepower. The interesting thing was that all the kids and people were like going up to the McLaren. I was like, you're looking at the wrong car.
Yeah.
That's the unicorn.
So thanks, Mark, for your opinion, but you haven't answered the question at all. And so the we appreciate your input. Our listener is still completely in the dark.
They're still clever.
The answer to why the GT2 RS is the most powerful Porsche is because it's the absolute top of the range of the 911. So there's a myriad range of 911s. A 911 is the two-seater rear-engined sports car from Porsche, and there are a myriad of them, and it's very complicated, and everyone tells me all the time how complicated the 911 range is, and what's a Carrera, and what's a this, and what's a that. So to simplify, the GT2 RS is the top of the range, and that's always the most powerful available 911. And why is it's twin turbocharged, flat six, 3.8 liter? Stand to be corrected.
Not the 4 liter.
It's not a 4 liter turbo.
Okay.
And it's turned up all the way to 700 horsepower. It uses variable geometry turbos, two of them with water cooling. So it's got independent water cooling system that cools the turbos, which is the reason that it can extract so much power. And I hope dear listener, that that answers your question.
Well, let's carry on about that. So you actually have to fill up a separate tank
for
the water
in the front.
Distilled water.
That's right.
But also, before you mention anything, Mark, I wanted to say that the 911 range actually stretches from about, 350 horsepower all the way up to over 700.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
So which to a layman almost looks like the same car.
Yes.
Mm. And that's amazing.
Yeah, so we've been talking horsepower, so 700 horsepower, because we don't work in...
480-odd kilowatts?
515 kilowatts.
515.
That's a lot.
So interesting, actually, so the GT badging, where it actually comes from, at Le Mans, in the endurance racing, there was a class called GT2, and then there was GT3. There was GT1 as well. So that's where it basically came from. Okay. And now Porsche has basically taken the GT3, made it, it's a normally aspirated car. The GT2 is a turbocharged car. And then the GT4, they've basically just cribbed a little bit and they've created their own thing for
the payment. Is that any of that to do with homologation? I wonder. No, GT2 is just kind of a naming convention.
So the GT2 class. The GT2 class nowadays is known as GTE Pro.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is what the pink pig one.
Moving right along. Before we get accused of talking too much about Porsche, which we always do, the next question is, please do a review of family cars for under 500,000 Rand and goodbyes on Auto Trader. Not even sure how to tackle that one, so shall we set it aside and say, please do a section on the evolution of electronics in cars.
The evolution of electronics.
But hold on. Why wouldn't we have a little challenge? What's the best family car we can get under 500,000 Rand? Like, what would... I mean, that's a fair question.
So you've got a glass of our family car first.
That's worked you up.
Aston Martin Vantage.
I agree, Mark. I take my kids to school.
All right, so our listener question is fired, Mark.
You have to do more than one trip.
That's more fun.
Family car under 500,000 Rand, Mark.
New or used? I would definitely recommend buying used, because I mean, buying a new car is going to depreciate so much, and we know we don't like that type of stuff.
Thank you, Mark.
So I don't know.
Nissan Qashqai. Can't go wrong with a Nissan Qashqai.
Depends how big your family is.
A 1.5. Well, I mean, geez, guys, I mean, if you've got two kids and a wife.
Okay, let's say two kids and a wife.
And a dad. I mean, how much space do you really need?
You need four seats.
Yeah, so you got four seats. What, I mean, a Qashqai can do that comfortably.
Thomas is probably right, and if you need seven seats,
get an
Aston Martin Repeat.
An X-Trail is 50%
share in an Aston Martin Repeat.
That's our consumer advice.
Oh, dear. Right. Okay, next. This segment is terrible. This is really not going well, listeners. We're so sorry. We're going to blame it on the quality of the questions. So,
and the tequila.
This is a good one, guys. Please do a section on what fog lights do.
Okay, so allow me, because I've said nothing in this entire segment except Qashqai.
And you're professional.
So basically, when you're driving in fog, fog is reflective because it's fine particles of water vapor. So when you have your main headlights on, okay, that light is refracted and it's reflected back, and it actually makes things harder to see.
Okay.
So fog lights are low down on the car in the front, and they're not that bright, but they give you enough penetration on the road ahead to see what's happening without blinding yourself with reflection.
I think you're totally wrong.
No, I'm not.
I'll tell you exactly what they are. They're things that are fitted to BMWs to piss other people off.
Don't they make you look cool?
No, they do at the front. But nothing is more uncool than leaving your rear fog
light. The rear fog light thing, that is my biggest bugbear with Mercury.
But why? Because it shows people that you have a car with a rear fog light.
No, but when it's Volkswagen up,
what
irritates me is most of the cars that have fog lights on have auto lights. In other words, if you leave the thing on A or auto, your lights come on automatically. You have to physically
turn
your lights on and pull it out two notches to get all your fog lights to come on.
That's so, guys, maybe we should point out at this point for our listeners, consumer advice, real stuff. It is illegal, in other words, it is against the law to use your fog lights if there is no fog. Please keep that in mind. The rear is incredibly bright. It blinds the people behind you. The fronts are low and reflect off the road and blind the people in front of you. Please, as much as you think that they're status symbols, turn them off. It's illegal.
So I had a 1973 Porsche RS replica that had CBA lamps on the bonnet, which are rally lamps. And when I used to turn the brights on, it used to be day. And seriously, I used to make other people cry on the road.
Do you know what we haven't said this whole segment? Alpha 4C. We need to talk more about that.
No, we don't. Let's not put that back on the table.
Give us another question.
Another question. Next question. This is a good one, guys, and I think we can sink our teeth into this one. Someone wants to know, what's the difference between a straight six, a flat six, a V6, a rotary?
Okay.
Okay, well, so how should we answer? So, okay, a V6 means it's got six cylinders, and the cylinders are angled at a V to form a V.
Arranged in a V format.
A three on each side.
Yeah, exactly. Very compact engine.
Yep. Takes up as much space as a three-cylinder engine.
Yeah, right? And usually favored by Japanese marks.
No.
Lexus loves a V6.
No,
Alfa loved a V6 long before Lexus.
Yeah. Well,
and
Ferrari loves a V6 in the Dino.
Yeah. Well, these days, you know, in this day and age, we find a lot of Japanese marks with V6s. And also, it's kind of almost like a dying breed because people are downsizing with turbocharged four-cylinder engines. So the V6 is kind of...
It produces a very nice, unique engine note.
It does. Mm-hmm. And then you get the straight six, which is basically the same thing, except all the cylinders are arranged in a row, straight. Takes up more space.
Very long engine, yeah.
Favored by BMW.
Yep.
Mercedes is bringing it back as well.
Okay.
They make a very nice noise, actually. Straight sixes.
Lovely straight sixes noise. That's a BMW hallmark.
So the straight six is an attractive option because it's inherently balanced.
Yeah.
So because it's inherently balanced, it's exceptionally smooth.
Very smooth.
And it can rev very well. So in other words, the choice of putting a V6 or a straight six in your car is an engineering decision made early on based usually on a number of compromises.
Also production costs.
But a V must be the most efficient in terms of power. And the only reason I say that is the current Formula One cars that unfortunately don't sound like what the old ones used to. They're 1.5 liter V6 turbos. So they would.
But they don't sound good because they've got turbos.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm getting to the point that the V must be the most efficient in terms of power.
I think power to size and weight.
Yeah.
They're teeny tiny little things.
So these are all differing. You know, it's a combination of weight, size.
Sticking with six cylinders, there's still the flat six,
which is what they are. So a boxer engine. Or a flat six is basically what you get in the Porsche 911, where all the cylinders are flat.
Yeah, horizontally opposed.
Correct.
Three on each end, and they call it a boxer because it looks like the cylinders are boxing each other.
Boxing each other.
They go towards each other and away from each other.
Mm. So in other words, 180 degree V6. There's three cylinders on each side, but instead of having 90 degrees for argument's sake, between them there's 180, so they're horizontally opposed.
And now an interesting variation on the V6, which this is probably the most boring thing we've ever discussed.
Is the V4.
Actually is the W12.
Yeah.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is essentially two V6s mated in the middle.
Used in Bentleys.
Mm-hmm.
So a Bentley took a VW motor, effectively, a VR6 motor, which is actually a V6 that is so close together that it shares a head. So... And that's really technical. So W12 has two heads instead of four because it shares one per bank of V6s.
No, honestly, I reckon.
Very technical. So,
honestly,
so then, Mark, what's a rotary?
Yeah.
A rotary
is a wankle.
Is another name for a rotary is a wankle.
Yeah.
And it is a triangular.
They have lobes. So
it's a triangle.
It's a triangle.
Yeah.
It spins around.
A rounded
around
triangle that spins around inside a chamber. Basically,
a triangle. It's triangles within triangles.
And they're
known
to be enormously revvy.
Because they have no up and down motion.
Massively thirsty.
Very thirsty. Love to rev. Very smooth.
Yeah.
It also has very few
moving parts.
I think like there are only three.
One.
Three moving.
The rotor just moves. Yeah, oh, maybe the shaft as well. Yeah. Okay.
So very, very smooth engine, very high revving engine, and again, it was a design that was kind of pioneered by Mazda.
Yeah.
Mazda has a big heritage with rotary engines. They won Le Mans. They were the first Japanese marque to ever win Le Mans with.
And that car sounded phenomenal. Eh?
It did sound phenomenal.
But I can only think of only one other manufacturer that did a Wankel.
Hmm.
The Mercedes, that 111, the C111.
Did they use a?
Not all of them. Some of them, they made a few variants, but one of them had.
There's a motorbike rotary engine as well. I think a Suzuki. There was a Suzuki with a rotary engine as well.
The R80 was a Wankel as well.
What?
The pre-Audi, but let's not talk about that.
There's one more configuration we haven't discussed, and that's a radial engine. That's when all the cylinders are
on airplanes.
On airplanes,
like in Casablanca.
Exactly.
When they're in the fog.
So all the cylinders.
Suddenly everything's gone so romantic.
The cylinders go effectively in a circle configuration. So they all have one central crankshaft.
Yeah.
And they all. Anyway, this is very technical and boring.
But
if you have any more questions,
do we have any more questions?
At TomFalconer111 on Twitter, let us know what you'd like us to answer, and we'll do our very best to muck it up.
Or just entertain you, you know? Yeah. We are done, Mark. You don't have to whisper. That's it for our Q&A segment. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to have a little debate about cars and movies. Welcome back to the show. Guys, in this segment, Mark, you've got some exciting news.
Do I?
Or is it exciting?
No. So I was reading through the news last night, and I saw that they've announced they're making Bad Boys 3, which, I mean, is a car cult movie, if you ask me.
Two
they maybe missed the mark. So let's just tell our 400 listeners exactly what cars they used in the first two. First one was a legendary 964. 3.6 turbo.
Yeah, which
why? So that's a Porsche 911.
Porsche 911.
One of the greatest widowmakers.
Very
ever.
Rare. They made 80 something cars.
No. But I think quite a bit more than that. I think it was about a thousand.
They're not really widowmakers. Huh?
Okay. Anyway,
I've driven a 964 3.3 around Germany fast.
Of course you have.
Chasing a 911R, so we were going very fast.
Tom, I've heard enough.
And I was surprised how stable that car was and forgiving it was.
Yeah.
So famously in the movie, it raced against a Cobra.
It did.
And a genuine Cobra, well, what we presume was a genuine Cobra.
Hmm.
And then followed by Bad Boys 2, where Will Smith drove a Ferrari 575. Am I right?
Did he?
Yeah. I don't remember. It was either a 550 or
a bit of a downgrade.
No, it was a 575 because it had a automatic gearbox.
Flappy pedal
uh-huh. gearbox.
Silver 575, yeah. Although, I think they made some manual 575s. Very rare. In fact, they made a couple of manual 599s, which that's seriously rare.
So in the movie, Will Smith is a...
Detective.
He's a detective, but he's also...
very smooth.
But he's wealthy.
He's a ladies' man.
He's got a lot of...
it doesn't add up. I mean, he's a cop with...
But he says it in the first one that he's a trust fund kid. He's a trust fund kid and must he apologize for his money. Anyway, so he drives these fancy cars and he's a detective. And his partner drives some banged up station wagon. So, Bad Boys 3, what car are they going to use? That is the question.
Well...
What do we think?
I think...
What would you choose?
Well, I think... What the movie franchise is going to do is they're going to try and get clever, and they're going to try and approach Porsche, or Porsche might get clever and try and approach them and say, listen, here's a new movie. There's going to be a lot of buzz around it. We want to insert a hot new product into the film, which is...
The Taycan.
It's going to be the Taycan.
Think so.
Yeah, could be.
I think
so. If they go to Porsche, because they've been to Ferrari, they've been to Porsche, what if they go to someone like
Aston?
So
let's McLaren. Ask a question.
Why not a 720S?
Because he's got taste.
Or a Senna.
Because he's got taste.
Guys, I think you guys are very knowledgeable. I'm asking the question.
Thanks, Mike.
What do you think they should be driving? Like, we should be actually advising this. So what do you think they should be driving?
Oh, because they're probably going to be listening to this.
I might do.
Okay, then I say
I think the Taycan kind of works because you still got throwback to the original one. It's still going to be kind of sporty, and it's going to accelerate very fast, and you still have like that kind of responsibility, that modern day social responsibility thing which people have ticking.
So a Taycan is an electric car. You think that that's going to be the new, that's going to be cool enough?
Yeah. I don't know. Tesla's cool. Tesla's made electric cars cool.
So the lead character, Mike Lowry, who's Will Smith.
Mike Lowry.
He's a bit older. He's still a ladies' man. He's still a bachelor.
Has he settled down now?
Still a cop. Doubt it. He's definitely not going to buy a Taycan.
Maybe a McLaren. It might be something. I think it's going to have doors that open up.
Yes. So maybe a Lamborghini.
You mean the doors of a billionaire?
Maybe an Aventador. The doors of a billionaire.
So actually, I'm just talking about the turbo 3.6.
No.
Guys,
it's too specialized.
I have a question. The first movie, how old are the cars in the movies? In other words...
So the first movie, I'll Google it, but I think came out in like the late 90s.
So in other words, is that 964 turbo current when the movie came out?
Yeah, it was.
So it was the 550 million.
But I've got to tell you, it's like one of the coolest things that I've seen in my entire life, car-wise. I was in Varsity, and I was going to study on a Saturday morning. And there was a turbo 3.6 in front of us, and it had a boogie board strapped to the rear wing.
Oh, yeah.
For extra downforce.
No, because he was going surfing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
In Cape Town.
There's a little plot twist for
pretty cool that,
for,
eh?
That is for the movie.
And it was black.
Hmm. Very nice. Okay, so then it's got to be a current car that Will Smith, he's getting on a little bit, but he's still...
Might
he's
be a
looking
Bentley,
good.
Eh?
He's a maybe Bentley. A Bentley.
And I'll tell you actually, and I'll tell you what I'm actually a little bit obsessed with at the moment is the new Continental GT.
Good looking car.
Good looking car. Handsome, eh?
Mm. They've dropped the bonnet line a little bit. The boot.
Roof line as well.
Still W12 V8, I think.
It is seriously. It's the first Bentley that I've ever seen. I could own that.
What's the price point on those? Like 4 million?
Probably. You want to buy one second hand.
It's a hell of a lot of car, though.
I don't know. It does nothing for me.
Come on, Tom. Okay, so it's another Bentley.
Not easily moved.
I reckon a McLaren. That's what he's going to drive. That's my top
tip. Maybe a McLaren. What, like a 575?
LT? No, it'll be the best one.
Yeah, it'll be a 720.
Maybe that new.
Nah, it'll be a 720. LT? It'll be a 720.
For 720, sure. Do they still make the 720?
I think a McLaren 720S, I think, is great. Cool. I think it's around. I'm not saying I love it, but I think it's probably what he's going to drive.
The yellow, orange.
Watch the space.
The problem with it is that the original one was done because the turbo 3.6 was just ridiculously cool. This is going to be product placement.
But you know what? It didn't suit him, I don't think. Like, I didn't think that car would end up in that movie. So the reason we're talking about this is because there's not a lot of car content in movies these days. We haven't really had any amazing chase scenes.
Transformers?
Oh, my God. I've never seen Transformers.
I haven't seen that. My kids watch that.
What? Megan Fox is in Transformers.
Oh, well,
you should be watching
I'll watch it next time.
Go home now and say, listen.
Anyway, so we're hoping that it's a cool car. And it's a cool movie, and
yeah, we'll have a look and see. Guys, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back to the final segment of Cargumentative, and to take this one away, Nadav.
So guys, I want to talk about Lexus. Okay. Lexus is the luxury division of Toyota. They've been available in South Africa for a long time. They've carved out a reasonable niche, I think, in the market. They've been around. They're not going anywhere. They're doing okay. They've never done spectacularly well. But it seems to be a very divisive...
Very.
Very divisive brand, Lexus. And what brought this on this week... is that a member of our posse here... Who could it be? Is shopping for cars. Mark has decided he needs a daily.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we advised him to go have a look at, he wants something that's quiet, wants something that's comfortable.
I sit in a lot of traffic.
Bluetooth.
Reliable.
He wants it to be reliable. He sits in a lot of traffic. He's also just turned 40.
Yeah.
He doesn't care anymore. So he's looking for something that will basically define, you know, the sort of the twilight years of his life.
That's so rude.
He's given up.
Yeah. So my dear friend Nadav,
so I said, go drive a Lexus.
He told me to go and drive a Lexus. In fact, he found me one. And he said, it's at this dealership. They know you well. Go and drive.
What was it? An LFA?
Well, I was expecting LFA type quality. But what I got was the most dreary, uninspiring, underpowered.
Well, you drove the wrong one. You should have driven the IS350.
I wasn't. Well, that's out of the said price.
No, it can't be.
It was. And for the sake of this argument,
how much are we talking about?
Under 200,000.
Okay, you'll struggle to get one.
Yeah, so we're looking at, and it can help with your previous question on family cars and around that subject. So I'm expecting, they look good. So don't get me wrong, Lexus makes some very nice looking cars. And I'm expecting it to be, like you said, a quality Toyota. So Toyotas are good quality.
No, I know that. You don't have to tell me.
They screw together well. Doesn't mean they screw together in a nice way.
They are.
Just well. So things don't come off. But their things are very plasticky. So I was expecting Lexus to be a little less plasticky.
Is this a discussion about perceived quality?
Yes.
So there's this concept
quality. So I'm taking you down the perceived quality route into the actual quality.
Ah.
So my perceptions were high. You set the bar high, man.
I'm sorry.
You said ignore the German sedans. Go to the Japs. They're going to impress you. I've never been so let down. Cut my ride short, got back to the dealership, threw the keys back at the gentleman who offered me the car, and said, how can you allow me to drive such
a car? No Lexus for you this week, Mark.
You drove the wrong one.
It's a V6. It's a 2.5-litre V6.
Yes, it's an IS250.
It couldn't get out of its own way.
No. So, Thomas, you're the motoring professional.
Yeah, right? I am, yeah.
Tell us, what are the highlights of Lexus?
Of Lexus? Well, the great thing about Lexus is, like, everybody bitches and whines about cars looking the same today, okay? Audi looks the same. BMW looks the same.
You mean Mercedes their models look the same as
Mercedes
each other?
They all look the same. They all blend into each other. I wish somebody would make cars that look different again. Everybody says on their soapbox. Lexus comes along and starts making cars that look very different.
They do.
Very wild. Extreme design language. Grill. Big spindle grills. And everyone's looking, oh, what are these things? They're hideous. They're disgusting. Lexus is making cars that stand out from the German, the banal German design.
Yeah, you know, the one I drove didn't have any, I don't know. It was comfortable and it was quiet and it was good looking and it was very refined, but it had no soul. There was nothing there.
Yeah, but that's
am very disappointed.
Me? Well, so was I.
No, I'll tell you why. Because
I'm going to look at Lexuses.
No, because
that too.
I mean, I can take the piss out of you.
Yeah.
On the fact that you are now driving a C-Class
testing
diesel,
lovely thing.
Yeah, I mean, did you get matching slippers? But if you had
slippers in the back of your Ferrari,
but if you
actually
had, it's true. But but if you had bought the Lexus, I mean, that would have been massively entertaining for us.
Absolutely. You would have been speaking about it forever.
You would have gone up in my book.
Blends in. No one talks. No one even notices it in the parking lot now. It's a fantastic thing.
Was it in the parking lot?
Exactly.
I had no idea.
No one notices.
I truly did not
see it. I've never driven a car where no one looks at me.
I must be honest.
I pull off and no one even notices the sound it makes. No one bugs me in traffic. No one wants my autograph. It's amazing.
So the Lexus USP.
And you didn't have to sell the Aston.
As you're concerned.
And I didn't have to sell the Aston.
Yeah. I'm going to throw something at you because you keep on talking over each other.
Okay.
Please, guys, one at a time.
Yeah.
So the USP for Lexus, as far as you're concerned at the moment, is aesthetics. They're trying to stand out from the crowd. The other thing that they've been fantastic at is actual quality. I think in the last 10 or 12 years, they've consistently topped the JD Power survey for quality. In other words, the cars that they produce are convincingly well built.
Very well built.
Which is important, you know, from an ownership point of view. They're going to last well. They're going to be reliable. But I agree that that's perhaps not the be all and end all.
But they also do make passionate products like I think I took you in it.
The
LC500?
You neglected to take me in it. I took somebody else badly.
That's a nice looking car. Yeah, that is, and it sounds good.
And it sounds good, and it's naturally aspirated. It's the last hurrah when everybody else making turbocharged stuff. Who's like the last bastion of making really cool, naturally aspirated cars?
Turns out it's Lexus.
Yeah,
Lexus,
kudos. I agree with you. Yeah. That is fantastic.
Awesome car. Yeah. And that thing is just, you know, I think they do a lot for the automotive world in terms of design and, you know, like just doing cool things that other marks don't do.
Yeah.
And they don't get credit for that.
So, top four Lexuses.
Lexi.
Apparently, it's officially Lexi for the record.
Mm.
So, top four. At number four, I'm going to put the IS350 as fantastic value for money. Power, comfort.
Have you been in one? Have you driven one?
One of my best friends just bought. Jesse bought one, an IS350.
And is it lovely?
The F Sport. I drove it last Friday. And great car. What do you need?
And at number three, we have
everything,
the ISF, a naturally aspirated 5-litre V8
with
an 8-speed Ottobock, four exhaust pipes.
Fake.
They are fake.
309 kilowatts.
Fantastic looking thing.
Yamaha engine.
At number two, the current on sale LC500. Fantastic looking thing. Same 5-litre V8. I think a 10-speed Ottobock. Looks like it's just landed from space.
And sounds like a GTE.
Sounds like a
GTE. M car. Awesome.
And, of course, at the top, at number one of our Lexus countdown is...
The LFA.
It has to be the LFA.
There actually is only one. To be honest, all the other stuff, it's like...
No way.
You're scrounging around in the Lexus toy bin just to try and find something to make up the top four.
No, there's so much choice.
There's lots. There's even the RC, which I like. The RC looks very good.
I saw the LFA at Swartkops in the flesh. Very disappointing.
No. The aesthetics of it aren't fantastic, but it is possibly the best sounding.
Wait, Mark, you are wrong. You guys are talking about aesthetics and you both love the McLaren Senna.
Yeah.
I think we'll have to end it there. They obviously don't know what they're talking about.
But the LFA is possibly the greatest sounding road car of all time.
Yeah. Okay, so the LFA has a Yamaha developed
V10.
It's basically a Formula One engine.
Fantastic carbon bodied supercar.
Yeah. It revs so quickly that they had to develop a digital gauge to allow the needle to move fast enough to match the revs.
Incredible.
Which
story.
Is incredible.
What a car. What an absolute car.
So Lexus's Lexi aren't bad. Maybe aren't fast or powerful enough to break their parts, hence the reliability. But anyway,
Mark's not going to buy one, but you guys all should.
Go drive an ISF.
Is there a chance that in this room that there will never, ever be a Lexus owned?
I would love to definitely own one.
If I had some money...
You'll definitely.
If I had some money, I would go out...
It's his halo car.
And I would get myself an ISF. I love the ISF. It is so cool. It's understated. It blends in. It's got that fantastic engine. It sounds like $1 million.
If you have an ISF, no one will look at you. If you have an ISF for sale, hit him up at Thomas Faulkner 111.
Tom Faulkner 111.
Tom Faulkner 111. He's going to buy one.
Exactly. Guys, thank you very much for joining me again in the studio. I'm sorry I was jet lagged. And I'm sorry the dove was grumpy. But,
always grumpier than
usual.
I had to hold the whole show together.
You did.
Thank you, Mark.
Anchorman. and then, as Mark says, if you guys have any questions for us, just hit me up at Tom Faulkner 111 and we'll try and answer them as best we can. Until then, keep it safe out on the roads. From me, Tom Faulkner, and everybody else in the studio.
Bye, everyone.
Ciao.
Cheers. Ciao.